Right, five jumping jacks. That's what we need. We need to get the energy up to talk about these video games. Go. 1, 2, 3.
Not happening,
four,
Matt. Not
five.
Happening.
Why not? Aren't you excited to talk about video games and not manga for once?
Of course.
Oh, well, let's get into it then. It's time for Matt Attack. Did jumping jacks on my seat then for you? And
well,
like,
I saw.
No.
Yeah. No, I'm too hot to do jumping jacks. You know, we've had very changeable weather here in the UK lately, and suddenly it's decided it's going to stay sunny and hot, especially up where I record this. I'm upstairs, and this is like the hottest room in the house. So there you
I
go.
I mean, not that people can see it because, you know, podcasts are an audio medium, but I'd say that Sonic in the background behind you looks pretty hot, Tom. I understand why you feel that way.
He's so hot, he's smoking. Yes.
That would be more shadow, I think, though, right? I imagine there's probably, like, PSA things saying, like, don't smoke, Sonic says smokers can't run, or something like that. I don't know. I'm just assuming.
Quite possibly, yeah, don't do drugs. Yeah, I'm sure Sonic said that before. Yeah. Don't smoke. Yeah, there was a smoking thing. I don't know. Let's talk about video games, shall we?
Have you been playing any? Because I haven't really. I've been playing one, but I'll let you take the floor first.
Okay, so we'll start off with something kind of current. Monkey Ball Banana Rumble.
Now, I don't
own this game, personally. It's Claire who owns the game.
Okay.
But she's away for the weekend, so she didn't take it with her. So I thought, well, I'll have a go. And it's good. It feels, I think really when you think about it, it's the first sort of proper sequel, which isn't a bit gimmicky in a way.
Yeah.
I think there's an emphasis on a new multiplayer modes, online multiplayer and things to that effect, but I haven't tried that. It does still have a single player story mode, and in that part of the game does very much feel like sort of the third Monkey Ball installment, because gone are the barriers, gone are the sort of like there is a gimmick, but it's quite a good gimmick, I would say. So it's not using Wii remotes or gyro sensors. It probably does use a gyro sensor, but again, it's not sold as a gimmick. But the levels are pretty good. It takes till about World 4 for it to get challenging. So it's good for beginners.
Right.
I would say. But yeah, as I mentioned before, there aren't barriers there, only in the first like training mode, which is pretty quick.
Yeah.
And the story is, if you're interested at all in the story, there's a new character called Pallet, and she's looking for a dad, and you're going around sort of globe-trotting to various world locations, collecting these artifacts. And basically, when you finish a world, you get an artifact. But what's also interesting is, and I can't recall this in any other Monkey Ball game, is golden bananas. So there's one golden banana on every stage. So that does create an extra challenge, because it's usually in a place that's, you know, might be a bit tricky to get to. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's only accessible by using the new feature, which is the spin dash. Now, they haven't distanced it from Sonic at all. You know, I think that's exactly what it's called in Sonic the Hedgehog. But basically, you charge up and then release the button, and then you fly off at great speed. And, well, that's not necessary in all the levels. You can see some levels are designed around that. Sometimes it's sort of like you can use it, but you don't have to. But maybe if you use it, you can finish the stage faster, get the golden mm-hmm. banana, you know, or something like that. So, okay. So you will notice the stages where, yes, I meant to use a spin dash here. It's fairly evident. Or just give it a go. Just see what happens when you spin dash and where the monkey ball will go. And then you can work out whether or not you want to use it. So they don't force you to use it. It's not all entirely built around the spin dash. It's very classic Monkey Ball, this one, I'd say. I think that's why it's so popular. Like, a lot of people have been praising this installment.
Well, I think, as you rightly said, I think it's the first Monkey Ball game that's been a quote-unquote true Monkey Ball game for a while, right? I can't remember. When was the last one?
Yeah, I suppose there's Monkey Ball on the 3DS that was a new game. And then, of course, for a while, yeah. And back on, it was a DS and the Wii and the 3DS and the Vita where you got the new Monkey Ball games. But there was those odd things like in, what was the one on the Wii that got remade and re-released? What was that called?
I will have
Banana Blitz, I think, was what it was renamed as when it was re-released. But that one had boss fights, and I remember that being a bit, that's a bit weird. And not always that fun. Sometimes it could be. But it sort of detracted a bit from the core gameplay. This one's very straight down the line. It's sort of like puzzle after puzzle,
Yeah, I think Super Monkey Ball Adventure was the last one I played on the PS2. And again, once it started getting more into
an obstacle course type thing. And I haven't really played Adventure. That's one of the ones I may have tried, but I can't really recall that grabbing me or playing very much of that. I remember that was developed by TT Games, actually.
I just saw that. I'm very surprised to learn that. I didn't realize.
They did that,
I assumed it was Ryoga Gotoku Studio, the Yakuza folks who have done that. I should stop saying Yakuza now. I should probably just say Like a Dragon, but I can't help it. I'm a creature of habit.
It's ingrained, isn't it? Presentation's nice. The story scenes aren't too invasive. They're fairly short. They introduce a few new characters. As I say, Pallet, who is sort of like a pointy-eared monkey. Quite cute. Female character who is looking for a father who's gone missing.
Interesting.
Yeah. So there's a plot. And presentation is nice. It's not like the most graphically impressive thing you've ever seen. It's exclusive to Switch as well, which is quite interesting. But it's stylized and rather nice. And the monkeys have all had got new clothes, and there's customizable outfits. When you collect bananas, you get points and you can spend them in the shop, and you can get like little outfits. You can get the Luffy straw hat. It's a straw hat with a red ribbon on it, so you can monkeys up as Luffy and put him in a red outfit, and there you go.
So the last Monkey Ball games all had a banana in the title, it seems like.
Yeah, Banana Blitz, Banana Mania. Splits? What's that one? It's Blitz, wasn't it?
It's apparently a game on the PS Vita, Super Monkey
Ball.
That's
what
Banana
it was called.
Splits.
Yeah, I have the Vita one. I remember it being having like a monkey ball in a balloon. Not a monkey ball, as like an inflatable balloon. I have it over there. But yeah, that was all right, actually. They've all been pretty good. But this one, I think, feels more classic Monkey Ball in its single-player mode.
Yeah, I get
I've heard mixed things about the multiplayer stuff. Some good ones. It's a little bit, what would you say? Frame rate's not great online when you've got so many players, I think.
Yeah.
Is that right? Or is it off? I don't know. Anyway, I haven't tried multiplayer basically.
I guess it just lags, right? And the frame rate dips as a result of that.
That's
it's not got rollback netcode for the Monkey Ball.
I don't know, mate, it's been patched since, I had to download an update for it. So I don't know if that's improved. But I was more interested in trying out the single player, which, at first I was like, well, this doesn't feel that different to maybe previous ones, the biggest difference being no barriers. So it's a little bit more like that's proper Monkey Ball, because you want a bit of a threat of falling off. I mean, the stages are still easy at the beginning, but you don't want it too easy.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Like, with the spin dash, are you kind of locked into it once you've started that momentum? I assume you can go straight and fast, but
you go in a straight line. You go in a straight. And it also introduces, you got free rein on the camera as well. So you use the right stick to actually sort of look around. And you can pause it and look around the stage and work out your strategy. I had to do that because there was one level where it really wasn't obvious what to do. That it was like a big circular arena. With no edges, and there was a hole in the middle, and then there was a sort of like where that hole was, there was like a lid, and it was like slightly open, and then the exit was on the bottom of the lid, and I was like, "Well, how do you get on the bottom of the lid?" And I actually had to use what's a handy mode. You can ask for a helper sort of tutorial where it actually show you a route and tell you where to go and how to solve the puzzle if you get stuck. You don't get the full sort of medal if you do it that way, you know.
Yeah.
You get a different color badge when you finish the world if you sort of cheat, so to speak. But I had to do it because basically you're meant to push the disc so it sort of falls. Yeah. And then you can access the exit. But yeah, it wasn't very clear that you could actually do that. So it introduces that mechanic, but it didn't really make it clear that you can do that. Yeah. Because usually you think you can't interact with the environment so much.
No.
But in this one, there's like some levels have like balls like that you can push and move out of the way in certain sections. So it does introduce some new gameplay elements, which does make it feel like a proper sequel. You know, it doesn't feel like it's sort of living in the shadow of the other Monkey Balls. Well, it is, but it's also trying to do something a bit new in the level design.
Yeah.
When you get about, say to World 4, and then the difficulty then starts increasing and, you know.
I suppose they have to do that, right? Because if I think back to classic Monkey Ball, I think I'd had my fill by the end of playing Monkey Ball 2, because I think there's only so many courses you can slide a ball around, right? For it to remain interesting. So I'm kind of glad that they're trying to introduce new mechanics.
Mm. And things, you know, it's not the first time they've done it. There have been new mechanics in Monkey Ball, but this spin dash works particularly well. I think it's probably one of the better new mechanics, because we've had jumping before. In Monkey Ball, and specifically on the Wii, where you flick the Wii about. There was Monkey Ball Step and Roll, where you use the balance board. I don't think that worked very well.
No.
But the control feels very good in this, you know. It just feels natural, and that it's very accessible as well, in terms of, I say, difficulty. It just sort of ramps up as you play. So I would recommend it, yeah. Can't say anything about multiplayer modes, as I say, because I've not played them. But it's good, and it's not incredibly pricey. You can get it for around a £30 mark, so I think that's pretty good. It's not like a £50 game or whatever. It's a little bit more accessible.
Do you think you'll finish it?
So far, you know, until I reach a puzzle. This is what happens in Monkey Ball. You reach a puzzle that sort of does your head in, and then you say, well, I'm done with that now. At least for a while before you revisit it. I've not got to a point, say, up to World 6 now, and I've kept going with it, you know. It's not put me off. I hope you don't get a puzzle which is so frustrating you then decide to retire the game, but I've not encountered that yet.
I assume it is probably the challenge is there probably around those golden bananas, right? And like,
you can see great replay value, revisit the levels, try and get the gold bananas, because you get special points, special bonus if you do get the gold bananas.
Do you also unlock special costume things? Is that how I get the Luffy hat? Or
well, that's very easy to get at the beginning. I think you can just buy that directly from the store. But perhaps more stuff comes available in the store as you play. I'm not 100% sure. It seems pretty well stocked. It's just that you need the points in order to get certain things, of course.
What if I told you that this game is only 8 worlds long, and how long to beat says it only takes 4.5 hours? Are you more inclined to finish it knowing that?
I assume it gets quite difficult then. I'm on world 6, so
yeah.
I assume that 6, 7, 8 probably get very hard.
Mario logic, man, of course.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of Mario, I thought, you know, I've been playing a lot of Sonic lately. Yeah. I'm just moving on to something else now. Monkey Ball's good.
It's okay. It was a transition. You didn't have to explain. I understand. We've podcasted long enough.
Super Mario Brothers on the NES. I thought, you know, I played a lot of Sonic. I completed those games, the original 16-bit Mega Drive games, over and over again. maybe I should actually complete some 2D Mario. So I thought, well, obvious place to start is Super Mario Brothers. Ooh, I realise why I've never completed Super Mario Brothers, because it's quite frustrating. I mean, it definitely shows its age as being, you know, quite a punishing game. So I played it for a bit, but I thought, you know, I like this, I like Mario, but I tell you the truth, I'm getting a bit frustrated with it. So I left it. Come back to it. But...
I smell the revival of a very, very, very old Tom and Matt Attack bit from back in the days of yore of the Super Mario Super Challenge. Are you going to beat all the Super Mario games?
Am I?
I did.
Did you?
I did.
Did we do that? Was that a thing?
I did, yeah. I played through all the Super Mario games, at least all the 2D ones.
Oh, wow,
and I
well
got 64 and thought, well, I did, yeah. And then I thought, life's too short. I'm not doing Super Mario 64.
That was my next question, really. I was going to ask, hey, Matt, I find original Mario games pretty hard. Have you ever completed any of them? And there you go.
Yeah, I have. You know what games are hard, Tom? Lost Levels and Super Mario 2. Those games are very difficult.
Well, I think Mario 1's quite hard. Personally.
It is 100%. Like, I didn't realize until I did the Super Challenge back in the old Tom and Matt Shack how hard Super Mario Brothers 1 was, because I think anytime I played it on All Stars, I think generally I skipped ahead because I could. Mm. And so I don't think I'd ever gone through World 6, 7, and 8 back to the Monkey Ball comparison and saw how difficult they were. And so. Yeah. I commend you for playing it. I think it's beatable. I think it's once you get used to it, it's doable.
I think out of all the original Mario games, I probably played 3 the most, because I found I got on with 3 the best. But then I got up to a certain level, if I recall, where it's branching paths and you have to take the right order. You know, one screen is a different path, you know, and if you get the wrong order, then that's it, you know. So I think I replayed that section a lot and I was like, oh, this isn't fun anymore. So then I stopped playing.
I got through 3 without any issue. Again, same as you. I think World and 3 are probably the two Mario games that I've played the most. And so I kind of just know that stuff, or like I played through that section and was like, oh, this is how you do this. I remember you have to go X, Y, and Z. So for me, I think it was more muscle memory of like, oh, crap, how do you do this? Okay, this is how I get through it. I think I had that frustration when I was a kid that you experienced and I got through again. 2 is really hard. Lost Levels is super, super unfairly punishing at points. So much so that I really didn't enjoy it.
That's the original Mario 2, isn't it? As it was released in Japan as Mario 2.
Yep.
Was it deemed too difficult, and that's why they decided to do something different with the Western Mario 2?
I think there's a little bit of that, but also they just wanted something different. Obviously it looked like the same game, and graphics had kind of been pushed a bit further then, and that's why they did Super Mario 2, which is of course isn't actually a Mario game.
It's I've heard
Mario
that one before.
USA in Japan. But yeah, you know what I mean, it's Super Mario 2 in my head, and I beat Lost Levels as well, so
well done. I will. You see, I thought, what's the next challenge? You know, Sonic I don't really find very difficult anymore at all. You know, it's sort of, I really enjoy those games. I enjoy the momentum. I enjoy the graphics, I music, the whole package, you know. And I never tire of playing Sonic games. But I thought, you know, Mario, I should be playing Mario. I really like Wonder. I mean, I still haven't finished Wonder, but I keep returning to Wonder every now and again.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. So I was just thinking, perhaps I should, though, revisit those older games. And what I really would like to see is a compilation from Nintendo where they give you unlimited lives, because I think that's the really thing that holds me back from Mario 1, is I keep going back to the beginning all the time because I lose all my lives, you see. So,
are you playing it on the Switch?
Yeah.
You have save states.
Sure, but you can get yourself in a situation where you've only got one life, and so.
Yeah, but to save at the start of the level, like when you get onto the next level, and then you know you have the life, and you're not going to be in like a weird jump halfway through or whatever.
Yeah. Well, I should do that, really.
It'll make it easier. But I mean, you're just going to go back to the start of the world anyway. It's okay.
Yeah. I hate doing save states. Really annoys me having to pause, save state, I mean, it's not that big a deal, is it really?
But no, it isn't.
It's if you just had unlimited lives, if there was a Mario compilation, which was similar to Sonic Origins, where you had some quality of life improvements, you know, like in infinite lives and things like that,
yeah,
I think that would be a great idea. I know Nintendo have recently released this World Championship thing where you can do challenges and such.
Yeah.
So you can play maybe Mario 1 with some different rules and things. But just having the game, the full game, with some like improvements, like I mentioned, that would be wonderful. Do like All Stars again, but do All Stars properly, not just re-release the SNES game like happened on the Wii. Yeah?
Yeah, and actually put these quality of life things in there and kind of like accessibility modes and all this kind of stuff.
It's a missed opportunity, I think, for Nintendo. They'd make a mint on that. Mario Origins.
Don't give them an excuse to resell you the same game you already own.
I know they've done it for years, but you know, you could include everything. You can include the advanced versions of the games. Have the whole package in there. What would you do it up to? You probably do it up to, you do all the 2D stuff together. Include the Game Boy games, original Game Boy, Mario Land, Mario Land 2. And
yeah. Do you know, the most insane thing to me is, right, I remember this, I haven't talked about it on the podcast. I was just remembering that Super Mario 3D All-Stars compilation that they put out with
3D Mario All-Stars, 64,
Sunshine and Galaxy.
Hmm.
I was in El Giganten, which is a electronic retailer here in Denmark, and I saw that they'd had copies of it on the shelf after the Nintendo sell-by date for, like, months, and it was maybe 200-300 kroner, so like 30-40 quid.
Yeah.
And then suddenly they realized that it was something worth something, and so like now it's 900 kroner to buy it new in a shop, and I'm like,
oh, that's wrong.
No one was buying it when it was 300. What are you doing?
Yeah, and then if they're gonna sell them, they should just sell those copies they've got, and that's it. That's a bit sneaky, on, isn't it? Can they
I'm
do
looking
that?
On I guess so. I'm looking on Amazon and people selling it for 130 quid, so again, I don't understand why.
Did you get it?
I bought it because, again, you could get it relatively cheap before it came out.
Yes, well, but I got it. I got it, pre-ordered it, maybe. I got it on release. There was something I wanted to have.
I bought it for the sake of it because of this artificial scarcity thing that Nintendo did where they were like, oh, after this date, it's gone forever. And
until they re-released them on the next thing.
Exactly, until the Switch 2 edition of this comes out and includes Galaxy 2 and makes this one worth
it. Oh, yeah, it's like what they did with All-Stars by adding Mario World to it on the Super Nintendo. So it'll be plus.
To be fair, I think the reason they did that was because it was a pack-in, but still.
Well, yeah, it's true, but
no excuse.
Yeah. I was thinking about the next Switch, as you do. Everyone thinks about the next Switch, don't they? What they like to see on it. Imagine a launch that had, well, for me, this would be a great launch if it had Wave Race, F-Zero, 1080. Oh, be nice. Just games they haven't sort of paid any attention to for a while.
Do you think we're ever getting a new F-Zero?
Well, it'd be nice, wouldn't it? You know, I've been playing a lot of Mario Kart recently, and Nintendo make good racing games. You know, Mario Kart 8 is pretty much a perfect game. You know, I've played it to death, and I'm actually reaching the point where maybe I'm having my fill of it again, because the last few days I've been playing quite a lot of it. For some reason, I haven't played it for ages, and I was like, oh, I really want to play Mario Kart again. I think I played it multiplayer fairly recently, and then like, give me the itch. So I got all them extra tracks and such.
Yeah.
But I think I'm reaching my limit with Mario Kart again now. But anyway, it's a great game. I just played a lot of it. F-Zero, great. You know, they know what they're doing with racing games. They make great racing games. So
they do.
Make some more. What have you got against racing games, Nintendo? You're not making enough.
I guess there's just people who are
made a Mario Kart in 10 years.
Well, yeah. I was about to say, I guess there aren't people there passionate about it, but you are right. I think the people there who are passionate about it have just made new Mario Kart content.
You know what I've got? I've got an idea. You know, Mario Kart 8 is so perfect, you think. It's got so many tracks now with the boost courses and everything. So, like, what do you do next? You do Super Nintendo Kart, which they've done a little bit of, haven't they? They've introduced Link and Animal Crossing characters, villager, and created levels based around them. What about you broaden that out? You have all the big Nintendo characters in a racing game, like Sonic and Sega All-Stars,
yeah,
Mario and Nintendo All-Stars, because I think you've gone as far as you can with Mario. You pretty much remade every course in every Mario Kart game ever made at this point.
Yes, they have, but I'm not against them doing like a double dash and going, ha ha, surprise.
Yeah. Well, that was my first
twist
thought, you know. If only you could, you know, because Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, you can have two weapons at a time, but I don't think you can switch weapons unless I'm missing something. But
I don't think so.
No. So switching weapons was great in Double Dash. But then again, you're just doing Double Dash again, which they've already done. But I wouldn't mind Double Dash again.
I'm not saying Double Dash again, but I'm saying something like that that
like Double Dash
does something new to Mario Kart.
Yeah, because it was 7 that was really the... 8's all based around the updates of 7, isn't it? It's the gliders and the underwater. And then I think anti-gravity was the big thing, wasn't it, in 8?
Yeah.
The anti-gravity bit. So that was the gimmick in that. And everything works together very well. It's very satisfying. You could add double dash mechanics to that as well, or something else. It'd be interesting to see. I think there's some amazing tracks. The tracks the original game came with are fantastic. And occasionally you get like good ones in that expansion course booster pack.
Yeah.
But some of them are a bit less interesting than others. But Mario Kart levels can be so cool. And Mario Kart 8 had a great selection of tracks. There's actually one that I played, because I'm playing through them all. I haven't done them all yet, the booster courses. But there's a Yoshi's Island one. Wonderful. It's the best one I've come across in the booster courses. So, yeah, I think perhaps you just do more exciting courses. Or you do Super Nintendo Kart, which I think is a great way to sort of rejuvenate the series. Whether that will sell, maybe the Mario Kart name is what sells Mario Kart. Maybe you could stick Mario Kart in the title. Mario Kart All-Stars.
I think you just call it like Super Crash Brothers and then just make it Smash Brothers, but Mario Kart.
There you go, you got it. So yeah, it's basically Super Smash Brothers, but for Mario Kart.
Yeah, I could see that. I could do Samus Aran beams. I could throw Pokeballs at people and have a Gyarados like wash everyone off the course. That would be fun.
I just think that would be great because it's sort of like Mario Kart as it is sort of holds itself back from going that way, even though it has introduced a few of those Nintendo characters. Why just not go the whole hog now? I think. It would create a lot of variety to the tracks and the characters, and you could introduce some new gameplay stuff.
Make the Smash Brothers expanded universe. Put them on wave racing things. You could have them do different things. You could have them interact with different Nintendo games then through the franchises and everything. Wow. It'd be fun.
Yeah, because Smash Bros. Is sort of like ultimate. It's done everything, hasn't it? It's like you can't imagine Nintendo creating another Smash Brothers game.
They will.
That had more. But... was more featured than that, you know.
Yeah.
They threw the kitchen sink, everything in that game. Do that for Mario Kart now. It's been so long. Everyone's waiting. We're all waiting for something. It's got to be something really special, I think.
Do you want to know my deep, dark secret? I never bought Super Mario Kart 8 Deluxe because I felt so burned by the Wii U.
No, me too. Yeah. I'm playing Claire's copy. I never bought it either. Okay. I felt so like, well, why should I buy this game again? It's, you know, that there are some additions to it. But I did buy the booster courses because I thought, well, that's more Mario Kart. That stuff that wasn't in the original.
That's how you tricked yourself into paying for it because you were like, well, this is Mario Kart I don't have. Now I see.
Yeah, well, there was like things I didn't have in Deluxe, but it didn't feel like, because I never... Battle mode's good, but I don't tend to play battle mode a lot. Of course, the battle mode in Deluxe is a lot better than the one in original Mario Kart 8. I went back to Mario Kart 8 the other day on the Wii U, actually, just to sort of see how many trophies I'd got on that one compared to how I was getting on with the Switch one. And it's interesting to look at it because it is a little bit slightly more rough around the edges. You can see the Switch one does look a little bit sharper. Some of the edges have been smoothed out a little bit, but it still plays the same. It's still great. And a testament to the Wii U, I suppose.
I keep meaning to dig my Wii U out and
play Mario Kart.
Just to play it again, just do some Mario Maker or something, just enjoy the gamepad before it inevitably dies.
Honk the horn on Mario Kart with the gamepad. You can do that with the game.
Where's this innovation, Nintendo? Why can't I honk? Why can't I honk?
There's a podcast title. Why can't I honk? I was going to say something else about the Wii U, and now it doesn't matter. We've moved on from Wii U. I'm on a total sort of like subject after subject. You're never going to get to talk about whatever it is you're going to talk about.
Wow, I've told you and you've already forgotten. This is how high you are on your own words, your fantasies.
Triple Z game.
Yeah, it's okay. Right, I will talk about it then. Yeah, Tom, it's time for another Hoyoverse game that I'm going to play for like a month and be really into.
Hoyoverse, yeah, I couldn't remember. I've played this as well, so we can actually have a bit of a back and forth on this one.
You have played some ZZZ, a.k.a. Zenless Zone Zero, ?
Yes, for PlayStation.
Yes.
Is it only on PlayStation?
At the moment, I believe it's on Steam, PlayStation 5, and also mobile, obviously, as are all Hoyoverse games.
Is that only PlayStation 5, not PlayStation 4?
I think so. I could be wrong. But I genuinely, that's what I believe. Let's have a look. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it's also on the PS4. No, it isn't. Platforms PS5, Android, iOS, and Microsoft Windows. I was correct. It's a new Hoyoverse game. From the makers of such riveting classics that I talked about to death on this podcast is Genshin Impact, and one I never loved but didn't play so much, called Honkai Star Rail, which is a turn-based RPG. Genshin Impact is essentially free-to-play Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. It's very good. If you haven't played it, I think the time has probably passed to get into it because it's many years old now and there's probably lots of stuff you'd need to buy and do in the game. But this is the thing. With a gacha, for me, you got to get in at the start and then you see if it hooks you, because there are free pulls, there are codes, there's all this other stuff that kind of makes the experience a little less aggressive / exploitative, which is hard to say, but it is a gacha game. Essentially, at the end of the day, a lot of it is gambling. But I do think what is there is essentially this time, rather than a big open world game or an RPG, they've made an action game. I like the combat a hell of a lot in it.
I also like the combat, Matt. It's everything else I don't like.
What do you mean? Break that down for me.
Well, I don't like all them TV screens in the game.
You don't like the aesthetics? Is that what you're telling me?
No, I don't like, after doing a cool action sequence and I'm stuck on a screen where I'm moving from one block to the other block and nothing's really happening. Okay. I don't understand what all that is and I just want to fight again. That's what I didn't like.
I get you. So that's like puzzle mechanics, right? So
I like puzzle games, but I didn't really understand what that was meant.
It's essentially, it's a shorthand version of you transporting around the hollow, right?
Yes, I suppose I got that. I got you moving from place to place, and it was sort of like in between the fights, this was you moving to the next area and stuff, but it was done as such a sort of... I like the presentation of the game, but I just thought that was a bit dull.
I thought the same at the start. I was like, okay, this is a bit repetitive that you need to do this. I will say, as it goes on, it becomes more puzzle elements to it. You start getting like sonic springs that bounce you around. You start getting areas where it's dark and you need to do a Luigi's Mansion style flashlight thing to get ghosts.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. Move on. I just want to fight.
I like it. I'm fine with it. It's only in the story.
I have a problem with that in games, I think. I like a game to sort of just show me like one thing and do that one thing really well. And if I want to play a puzzle game, I'll play a puzzle game. If I want to play an action game, I'll play an action game. I don't always like it when things are... Actually, hang on. I like Monkey Ball and their puzzles and action.
I was going to say, yeah.
But that's integrated very well. I think it's the integration here. It feels like a different thing. Am I just bashing on this? I don't mean to be.
No,
the
I mean,
very fun.
Yeah. I think there's plenty of things to bash on. I think you have to remember that this is a mobile game, right? And I think this is quite easy to do when you're, you know, just brushing your fingers across a thing. I think they've thought about, hey, is it going to be fun to do this big 3D world traversal all the time on a mobile game? Because
no, probably not. Isn't. This is no. No, I get it. I get when you talk about as a console game though, that felt a bit limited.
Yeah, I feel you. And Honkai Star Rail, I think I can't remember what that game's
Honk.
Called. It's called Honk Star
again.
Honkai, it is Honkai Star Rail. Good. In Honkai Star Rail, there's a lot of running around corridors that are empty, and it's very frustrating. And I think maybe this is them trying to alleviate some of the things that people didn't like about Star Rail.
In a stylistic way. Because, you know, it's presented stylistically. Yes.
Yeah. I honestly felt the same as you. And when I got further into the game, I enjoyed it. I also think the combat is so good that I don't really mind it. There are bits where I'm like, okay, this section's going on a bit too long when you're running around the TVs. But generally speaking, I think the combat is so satisfying that I enjoy bouncing between them.
Satisfying. That's a great word to describe the combat. It is satisfying.
It is. It's very Moore-ish. It is a perfect mobile game because I think once you've played it for about an hour or so, you kind of are like, right, I'm done with this now. I'm going to put this down. I think it's great in like bite-sized.
That's right. Yeah, I couldn't imagine playing it for a long time. I think I did half an hour and that was it.
I've played a lot of it. I think I've played like 20 something hours in total. I've been doing dailies and doing all this other stuff.
Yeah, there is that side of it. You know, I didn't get caught by that element of the game. You know, I'm probably good that I didn't, because there's every chance I could have done. I didn't need another thing like that.
I don't have a thing like this at the moment. I've kind of completely fallen off of Fortnite, and I don't really play a lot of video games these days.
Yeah, Fortnite. And so, I play Fortnite once a week, and that's it.
Yeah, well, you have your routine, right, on a Thursday, and that makes sense. For me, I'm just like, oh, well, I just want to play something quick as a break between reading manga and doing all of this other stuff I've been doing recently. And so, for me, this is a perfect, like, hey, I can just pick up and play it.
It's like when I play Buster Move.
Exactly. It's like when you play Buster Move.
Yeah.
It's great. I like the character design. So Genshin's kind of got a fantasy setting. Star Rail aesthetically appeals to me the most because it's like sci-fi fantasy, which is my bag, but I fell off Star Rail because I wanted to wait for it to come out on console, and then when it did, the account integration stuff wasn't very good, and so I got frustrated with it. This is more of a... It's kind of a little bit cyberpunky, but it's more, for lack of a better term, like urban. It's more like streetwear and like people wearing cool clothes and
Splatoon.
Fashion and all of this other stuff. Kind of Splatoon-y, yeah. It's definitely riffing on those same vibes, just less like splatter and graffiti elements. It's cool. I like it a lot. My squad is a shark maid lady that is no longer in the game, and everyone I know didn't manage to pull her, so I'm kind of glad that I did. I got Grace, who is a lady who fired a nail gun. Yeah, no, I know. And
you
then
have to
I
explain
have,
that. Is that like
I will.
It cards?
Yeah, right. Let me finish my squad.
Sorry.
I'll explain it. I got a big bear called Ben, and he's defensive and he's nice. Yeah, so this is a gacha game. So rather than unlocking characters, though you do unlock some, Ben, I think, is a free character. Once you reach a certain part of the story, you start off with a character called Billy, who is equal parts Vash the Stampede and Deadpool. You get one called Anya, who's like a very stern soldier lady, and then there's another one, I think, whose name is Grace. I didn't play with her for long, who's kind of a wheeling-dealing lady who's always getting up to no good because she's obsessed with money. They're nice characters, but like I quickly moved on from them. How you get new characters, such as Ellen, the shark lady, is you have to pull like a gachapon machine. Like there's a random element to this where you get currency in the game to unlock new characters or attempt to unlock new characters, and every time you do that, there's a chance that you may pull one of these characters. And that's essentially the core of this game, is you're playing along, you're earning currency to then gamble to get these characters. Mm-hmm. It is very egregious in Hoyoverse games. It isn't something that I think, if you have potentially issues with self-restraint and gambling, maybe you shouldn't play a gacha game, because that's kind of what it is.
You spend money to buy a random gacha.
A chance of unlocking a character, yeah. And obviously you can do this with in-game characters.
Yeah,
kind of. It is that kind of same thing. But obviously with a Pokemon card, you have something that's eventually worth money. With a gacha game, you get a character
you can't
that
trade
is attached
it
to the
you
game.
Have it.
No, you can't. And the worst thing is, even if you get doubles, they go into the character and unlock more special moves and stuff. So actually you need more of the same character, and the chances of getting them are pretty low. It is a knock against the game. Obviously, this is the business model that, unfortunately, these games subscribe to. But I haven't really felt the need to throw a load of money at it. And if it got to that point, I wouldn't. There was like an introductory thing for like 40 krona or whatever it was to get some free pulls and some free things. And I did that because I was like, well, I've played this game for like 20 hours. Why not? But you could obviously quite easily start dropping money for premium currency that unlocks this currency to do that. And I've so far stayed away from it. There's a battle pass in the game as well. And so far, I haven't bought that either, because even though I've got quite far on the free version of the battle pass, it doesn't really seem worth it to pay the £10.
I always feel like that about Fortnite.
Well, no, in Fortnite, right, you at least know, by the time I get to the end of this battle pass, I'm going to get these skins and I'm going to get this thing that I really
want. If you want the skins, though, that's the thing. I suppose I often, just like we've been seeing the battle passes, and go, I can do without all this. But it's a personal thing, isn't it? I suppose. Because I'm not bothered about Magneto at the moment.
This is the thing. When it's all IP stuff, I'm not that bothered. It's usually like when they had the weird Fortnite anime characters that I really liked it. And
If you really like a character. I mean, I guess recently the power armor was quite enticing, but not enough for me to get the battle.
I almost bought it for Snake, but I'd already fallen off Fortnite by then, so I forgot it was on. Yeah. Oh well, it is what it is. Overall, ZZZ I think is good. I would say give it a try. It's free. It's not going to hurt anyone. Stay off the subreddits. There's some people who are really into this game in interesting ways, shall we say, and this kind of pervading the narrative, but of course it is a game where there's pretty lady characters.
I assume that's the same for other games, the developers. So you get a fandom who get very into the characters, perhaps.
I think it's something that's kind of been built in gacha games, and I think that's part of what drives the desirability of these characters, is that there's a slight horny edge to it, but you can play that game without really engaging in that stuff. It's not egregious and in your face. So
No, it didn't appear like that to me. You know, cool characters. So character design was good. If not, a little bit generic for my liking, you know.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
Girls and guys, it's like, and there is a character who is, as you said, reminiscent of Deadpool, and I'm not the biggest fan of Deadpool myself, so that character didn't particularly appeal to me. But, you know, they were nicely designed, you know, costumes and everything. It's just, you know, the anime style of them was a little bit generic for my liking.
Yeah, I get you. Like, I think that's, again, why I like Star Rail a bit more, is I think there's a lot more going on and there's a lot more ability to do, like, crazy sci-fi space opera dresses and stuff,
you mentioned the bear and the shark girl. Yeah. That sounds a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, it is. And obviously, like, I that's the stuff I kind of gravitate towards in these, because there was one point where I had Grace, I had Ellen the shark lady, and I had the new police officer that everyone is raving about in a trial version of her for one of the missions. And I was looking and I was like, these characters kind of all look the same. Like, different proportions, different builds, but like, they've all got the same haircut, they've all got the same eyes.
Yeah.
It's pretty generic, but I still think the character design is cool. I kind of like this grungy city aesthetic that everyone's got going on. And again, I've got a bear in a giant tracksuit, and that's really cool because he's got a massive cannon. So, you know, swings around about.
The combat is really good, and it's very satisfying. It's very quite easy to pick up. It's well designed in terms of how it all works. It doesn't feel too complex, really.
No,
at least and not why I played, which was obviously the very beginning.
No, but I think it carries on like that, right? So you've got squares and attack. You've got occasionally you build up like a meter to use triangle as a heavy attack, mm-hmm. and then you have the ability to either press X twice to dash, or you can click R1 to do like a kind of bullet time counter attack. The enemies will like blink a red or a gold cross, depending on if you can avoid it or not. And then you can just dash into that, and it adds to combos and stuff. I think it's very fluid. It is a combat system I really enjoy, and I got very good at fast, but I think that's kind of the point. I don't think they're looking for people who want to S rank extremely hard Dead or Alive stuff. I think they're looking for a more casual audience, and obviously if you feel like you're
With different difficulty levels, I think I was probably
you can
accessible one. Maybe
I don't think until you get to level 20, because there's like lots of internal levels and everything else. I think when you get to level 20 you unlock hard mode. But again, I think that just means spongier enemies and that you need to level and stuff. So I haven't really engaged with any of that hard mode stuff yet. It's been quite fun to just play it regularly. As the game progresses, it gets more challenging. But again, I just think it's quite a casual game. I've heard people complain that it's too casual. I'm like, what do you mean? I feel this game feels good to play. And that's enough to keep me interested, because obviously, if you think you're good at the game, you're probably more likely to stick with it and more likely to then spend money on it to get the characters. And I think that's, again, it's all for the
part
gacha,
of the grand
maybe.
Plan, isn't it?
You got to make sure the gacha don't get you. So
great visual style and great action. That's what I took away from it.
Also, cool soundtrack as well. I do like it. It's good.
I didn't pay any attention to the story, though. I skipped everything.
I got to be honest with you. I'm kind of doing some of that as well. There are the main story beats where they animate things are fine. The ones where you're doing like side missions that are mainly in those worlds, I'm like, oh, I don't really care about this.
I felt that could be shorter. I mean, short bits of story in between rather than many, many screens as there seem to be. That's what I played.
I think the game gets better at breaking that stuff up as you progress, because there's loads of side missions that don't have so much story stuff. There's just text and audio, but
I do like some story-based games, and I've enjoyed many story-based games in the past, but more often than not, I want something more pick-up-and-play arcade style, where, you know, I'm playing, engaging with the game more than I am watching, you know, cutscenes.
I mean, for me, I like this kind of stuff. I just don't think the writing's that engaging, and also I'm doing so much reading in my spare time now for manga and things, and I'm just like, I don't really
You
want to
play,
this.
You don't want to read.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, I tell you what, Matt, if you want to just play a game, there's no genre better than a puzzle game, really, in terms of just pure gameplay. In fact, there's one I've been playing recently, which we briefly talked about for the podcast, and I've already sold it to you already, which surprised me somewhat. The game is called Pastel Muses, and you may be forgiven for not... Well, you can be forgiven for not hearing of it, because I never heard of it until the other day when I was doing a search on one of my favorite places to purchase games, GenkiVideoGames.com, and I was searching for Buster Move because, as mentioned briefly, I'm pretty into playing Buster Move lately, and I've been picking up quite a lot of games in that series. So as well as Buster Move 3DX for the PS1, I also picked up Pastel Muses because it's similar but different. It's Buster Move on a slope with a Angry Birds like catapult mechanic. You're catapulting what we call them, bubbles at an angle to try and try and get three of a kind. And then once you get three of a kind, they explode, and then all the other bubbles fall and cascade downwards on the slope. So yeah, it's like Angry Birds meets Buster Move meets Worms, kind of in the way you need to what would be the word? Apply the right amount of force in order to catapult the ball the right distance. So you do that by holding down the button, and initially you get little trails so you can see where it's going to land. And you do get these also if you're struggling, say if you fail level, when you come back into that level, it'll give you a little guide to show you where they're going to land. But more often than not, you don't get a visual representation. So you just sort of work out, and it's very satisfying actually working out how long you should press a button down in order to how far and the arc of the ball you're firing. I hope that makes sense, because it's much easier to see the game in action. So I'd recommend checking out a video.
Having seen the video of it, I would say it's like physics-based buster move, as you say. It's all about... Yeah. Your angle and kind of the weight of the thing and where you want to hit it. And again, the fact that the well isn't just a vertical drop like in a Tetris or Buster move.
Yeah.
You have to think about how these things are going to react and fall down into like this V shape.
And it's satisfying, like those videos you may watch on the internet where someone does something satisfying, like cut a cake or something like that. That's a bad example.
But I know what you mean, though.
When these balls or bubbles cascade downwards and create chain reactions like they do in, say, Puyo, so it's really like it's got all those elements of a lot of the great puzzle games thrown together. Because when you create a train reaction in Puyo, it's very exciting. And you can create these train reactions in Past on Muses as well, which is developed by a Japanese studio called Soft Office, who I don't think have done very much. I just looked them up. It was actually a Sega website I found, and there was like four or so Saturn games. But this, I've been playing it on the PlayStation. It is also available on the Saturn in Japan, if you prefer to play it on the Saturn. The PlayStation version seems great. I can't compare it because I've not played the Saturn one, but I imagine they're very similar. I don't think you could really mess it up. No. It's quite a simple game. But also, I didn't mention this, there's also sort of levels like where you've finished a section, you'll get like a boss who'll stand in your way as you're trying to fire the balls down the slope. He'll sort of stand there and create a bit of a barrier for you.
Oh, okay.
Also, everything is shifting to the left, so you're timed as well. So there's a next to your character who's sitting on like a plunger. That's how he fires off the balls. You've got a line next to him, and if the balls cross the line, then that's it, it's game over. But yeah, sometimes you also have an enemy standing on the slope who creates an extra obstacle, and they're usually like boss battles at the end of each stage. There's a lot going on. You know, I took a bit of a chance on this game. All I knew was it was like Buster Move or Puyo.
Yeah.
So I was like, pleasantly surprised how good it actually is. And how, if you were to see it, you wouldn't necessarily think you would. If you saw the cover, it's very cute. They look like otters, the characters.
I was trying to figure out what they are. Like, they're otters, they're hamsters. I don't know what they are, but they've
got a musical thing, a musical theme going on with how the levels look. There's a musical notes in the background.
Yeah. Whereas the cover almost kind of looks like a Sanrio thing to me. It's very bright, very like poppy colours.
I think if you just saw the cover, I don't know if you'd necessarily think to give it a go, but
I kind of like how the aesthetics of the game look, though. They do remind me a lot of Buster Move. It's kind of got this kind of almost very, very like shaded kind of pseudo 3D,
pastel.
2D aesthetic to it. Pastels that look like pastel almost music. Like clay as a result of how many.
Well, the characters are rendered characters. You know?
Yeah.
So they're not pixel, that, you know, they're, well, they are, but, you know, they're created in a sort of rendered, pre-rendered fashion. I'm trying to think of an example, Mischief Makers, you know, or Mortal Kombat.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. But yeah. I'm talking more about the environments and stuff around them. It's kind of...
Oh, yeah, the backgrounds and stuff, very colourful. It's a bit like Rayman, if you imagine how Rayman looks. Original Rayman, this is. Yeah.
It looks cool. I'm going to definitely pick up a copy if I can.
Yeah, it's a cheap game. I think it cost me £8 on the PlayStation.
Wow.
So
bargain.
I mean, I can't imagine it's particularly sought after. It's a bit of fun. It's not going to. It doesn't reinvent. Actually, does it? It does reinvent the wheel. It reinvents the wheel pretty well. Yeah. And that's what's so great about it. You know, it's a great concept. You think genius come up with this. What a great spin on this formula.
All you needed to do was tilt the well, and there we go.
That's why it's so good. But I tell you what's also a good Buster Move, and you can't go wrong with that series of games. I've been playing a lot of Buster Move Galaxy, well, Puzzle Bobble Galaxy, it's called. That's the confusing thing when a game's been around for so long and then they revert back to the original Japanese title. Then you don't know what to call it anymore. Yeah.
But, call it whatever you want.
Call it what you want. Puzzle Bobble Galaxy on the DS has got lots of nice modes and features, and it's a great one. I've also been playing Puzzle Bobble Every Bubble on the Switch, which it's like limited in terms of like the backgrounds and the characters, unfortunately. Bub and Bob are there, of course, and but there's been better Buster Move Puzzle Bobble games with lots of characters, like Puzzle Bobble 3, got a great presentation, lots of great characters and very unique backgrounds, like 2, but even more so. I think a lot of the characters are from different Taito games as well, so it's a bit of a crossover type thing.
Yeah, again, the Mario Crash of Puzzle
Bobble. And 4 is good too, similar. It's more challenging, actually. Maybe the best balanced single player versus mode on a Puzzle Bobble game is Puzzle Bobble 3, I would say. It's sort of got best of all the different games, but it also has 4 has Rumble, which is very interesting in a Puzzle Bobble game. And on the PlayStation version, maybe the Dreamcast one, you can change the intensity of the Rumble. So if you want a lot of Rumble, you could just press, I think, select. That's one button, and you can move between different intensities of rumble. And actually, it does add an extra element to the gameplay. But if you want one portable, I keep coming back to Puzzle Bobble Galaxy.
I'll give it a look. I have been thinking about it as we talked about last week in a non-related podcast before we recorded. I kind of want to pull out my Game Boy / Game Boy Advance Puzzle Bobbles / Buster Moves and give them a go, because it's been a while since I've played those and I wonder if they're any good.
Do you ever get into Puyo Puyo?
I love Puyo Puyo. I'm still trying to get good at it.
You know, I love playing it. I found on the various different console versions the single player gets very challenging very quickly, and that always puts me off because the computer plays the game incredibly well, much better than me, and I don't tend to last very long. So that's a shame that those haven't got like Puzzle Bobble 3's versus mode perfect. If there was something like that for Puyo Puyo, all these names, I'd get that, because I've played a lot of the Puyo games on the Game Boy, on the well, I don't know why I said Game Boy above all the others, because there's so many and so many different.
I was going to say, have you not played Mean the Bean Machine and Kirby's
Mega Drive? Yeah,
whatever.
There's so many. I think because the last one I played was Puyo Puyo Sun for the Game Boy Color. Strangely enough,
weirdly, the last one I played was Puyo Puyo Tetris, which is a game until we had this conversation I forgot exists and is absolutely amazing.
It's so amazing, and actually, the last one I played, because every Thursday night prior to playing Fortnite, we have tended to play Puyo Puyo Tetris. But just, it's great, that game, because you can play it how you want. You can play a mixture of the both, Puyo Puyo and Tetris, or you can just play Puyo or Tetris, you know. And just like Puyo that we've been playing.
How am I just seeing that there's a Puyo Puyo Tetris 2? How has this escaped my knowledge?
Bargain game that is as well. I got the PS5 copy for next to nothing. It's more of the same, in all honesty. I think if you've got one of them, you don't necessarily own another one, but still good if you want.
This is a game I imported from Japan to have a physical copy of for my Nintendo Switch back when I cared about such things.
Yeah, it's also getting away though. It's a game you kind of don't want to have to think about putting the cartridge in because you kind of want it accessible all the time. I find that, like with Puzzle Bobble, every bubble I've got the physical copy, came with a nice keyring, and very cheap for a physical game. You get them from Game for £15, and they never seem to go out of stock, even though they tell me this. I've bought two because I bought one for my friend Gareth. They never seem to go out of the stock of it, even though they keep saying it's selling like hotcakes.
Maybe that's why, because it's £15 and it's got a nice keychain.
And it's a great game. You can play that online, by the way. If you ever want to play Puzzle Bobble online against other people, you can. I know we switch from game to game here, but that one you can play online. People are very good at it, but it's good to have the option to play real people online.
It is much more forgiving than a computer sometimes. I use sometimes as the optimal word.
Sometimes
I get steamrolled. Yeah, exactly.
Very good that I've played online so far. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's all I've really played. I've got those lovely limited run versions of Trip World, which I will get into soon. I can't wait to play DX. It's Trip World, but in color. And what an amazing way to improve on an already almost perfect game. So I'm going to give that a go at some point. But other than that, I think my gaming calendar at the moment is pretty limited.
I didn't mention. I've completed, or at least the main story of, Pokemon Legends Arceus. I had a phase of a few weeks ago, because we haven't podcasted for a while, playing that. And I have to say, it reminded me how refreshing that game is in terms of the Pokemon franchise and changing things up a lot. And had me playing every day. I was having maybe a couple of hours on it, you know, and played through that story. But I realize there's more to come. I haven't got all the Pokemon, of course, and there is a sort of after game. What do you call it?
End game.
Yeah. Because you haven't, at the point you do the main story, you haven't got Arceus yet. You fought Dalgia and Palkia, I think they're called.
Yeah, you have. So I'm exactly where you are. I caught every single Pokemon bar.
Well, I haven't caught all the Pokemon.
Spiritomb has like fragments that you need to collect in the world. And then for some reason, I couldn't get a Cherubee. No matter how much I tried, it has a random chance of falling out of trees, and I never got one to spawn.
The little cherry Pokemon?
Yes, I couldn't get one.
Really?
Yeah, weirdly.
Been a few of them.
maybe now it's been patched. Maybe they're easier to get. But on launch, I could not get one for love nor money. It sucked. It was really hard. But once I get those, then I can go fight Arceus. But I hear that battle is very difficult.
Yeah.
So I'm like, ugh.
One thing I don't necessarily like about how the gameplay changes up when you're having the boss battles with the Pokemon who have gone wild. They give it a name in the game, like the Furious. They've gone rogue. And you have to calm them down by throwing bombs at them.
Yes.
And that changes the game into like a action game. And it's a bit jarring when you've gone from your turn-based combat in the main game, as you're wandering around collecting Pokemon and such, to something that does require some reaction time. You know, and what one thing I really like about Pokemon is it doesn't require you to react fast to stuff. You know,
no.
It's a game you can sort of play one-handed, pretty much. It's like the controls are that simple, and the turn-based nature of it. But yeah, so that is a bit jarring. But you know, I manage through the frustration sometimes. But I manage to do those battles.
Yeah, again, it's this thing that games need to have boss battles, right? And it just feels odd and kind of cumbersome. It doesn't really fit the aesthetics of the game.
And it's funny you should mention that again, because I'm thinking now, Puzzle Bobble Galaxy actually has boss battles, but they're quite good.
Okay, interesting.
That's an instance of introducing a boss battle, but actually being quite... It's one of the actual more unique things about it. But really, you're just playing Puzzle Bobble to beat the boss, kind of, because the boss is on screen, on the top screen on the DS. You have like little targets around it with the bubbles attached to, and you have to get rid of all the bubbles, basically. Yeah. And then the boss is like an obstacle. Kind of like in, what's it called? Pastel Muses. But there you go.
Okay. I'm excited to play Pokemon Legends ZA or whatever.
Yeah, I look forward to that. Because I haven't even bothered with Scarlet and Violet because I wasn't that compelled from what I'd seen to play them. I thought Sword and Shield was fine, but far too easy. It didn't really, excite me too much, in all honesty. Whereas Legends was like, oh, this is new and this is fresh and I like it. I'd like to see more of that and I look forward to the new one. Which could be on, maybe it'll be on Nintendo Switch as it is, or will it be on Nintendo
Switch? It's announced for Switch, so let's see. But I mean, they can always pull a Legend of Zelda, right, and make that a launch title and just be like, hey, it's on both. So let's see.
Yeah, that could happen. I was thinking, I mean, we briefly touched on it before, Nintendo Switch 2. I've been thinking a little bit about what could be done with that. And it came out of my frustration regarding the Joy-Cons recently, setting up Switch Sports.
Yeah.
If you've not been playing with the Joy-Cons often, you have to set them all up before, don't you? You have to press L and R on them, but you have to make sure you're pressing the right way around. You want two individual controllers, not one controller. So I've always found that not very intuitive and a bit frustrating, setting up the Joy-Cons as two individual things, putting on the slide thing on the side and everything. And it did make me think, is there much value to it? Perhaps, the idea was you could put it in your dock at home, pull off the Joy-Cons, and you've got a controller, right?
Yeah.
Kind of great, but at the same time, I always prefer to use the classic controller. Pro controller, what it's called.
I never do. I have no other controller other than the Joy-Cons. So for me, I just use them in my hands. Like I said,
Do you put the side bits on them as well?
No, do I? Hell, I just, I literally just hold them in my hands. Yeah. I just hold them in my hands. I don't really care.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I just wondered if Nintendo was to do another one, maybe they don't necessarily need Joy-Cons anymore. I do like the, because they introduce motion control into games, but maybe just have a separate motion controller that you release with a Wii Sports type, Switch Sports type game.
Because
that's where it's got the most value, I think. Otherwise, I think just the controllers are better. So sell the system as an all-in-one, but maybe with an extra controller. So when it's docked, you can just use that. I don't know. I've just been thinking about it lately.
That's fair. I wouldn't mind. I'm curious to see how this other Switch is, because
we don't know much or anything.
Things flying around in terms of like patents and stuff, and people think they're going to go back to a DS style thing with a folding screen and like two screens and everything else, and that could be cool. I can imagine like if it was like a Samsung. I've been seeing lots of ads for Samsung phones recently that remind me of Game Boy Advance SPs. Where the screen folds in half, and I'm like, if they could do that with a games console, I'd be into that. If they had like the Switch style controller docks on either side of the screen, so you could have it like a little gaming handheld with a flip screen or a full screen, I'd be into that. But I don't know how that would work.
I'm too bothered about that. Sounds expensive to me.
Maybe
foldable screens and such. I just want something. It doesn't have Joy-Con drift.
Yeah.
If the fact that the Joy-Cons themselves inherently have this problem because of their form factor and what they are, what they offer, because you don't get that with a pro controller, whatever they're called. They only seem to happen with the Joy-Cons. So I really want to avoid that ever happening again, because I've still got my original Joy-Cons. Occasionally they do drift and it annoys me. You don't do it all the time, but it's so much you kind of think, well, I'm not going to bother maybe using the Joy-Cons or having it in handheld mode right now because it is annoying. It usually passes. It usually I turn the console on and then there's a little bit of it and then it goes away. But I gather this can get worse to the point where perhaps the controller becomes unusable and you have to get a new one or get it repaired if you can.
I mean, this kind of... Did you see the, on a slightly related topic, did you see the new gachas that they put out in the official Nintendo shops in Japan?
Yeah,
I know people are clamoring to get them because you can use the buttons to replace buttons on actual controllers.
These are like the control stick or the face buttons on a little keychain for the various
they
Nintendo
are.
Systems.
Yeah, and oh my gosh, Tom, I want a C-stick for the GameCube so bad because I could just fiddle with the C-stick wherever I am.
They're like a fidget toy. Type thing.
They're
cool.
They look cool.
Yeah, I only available in Japan. Yeah.
And have immediately sold out. And hopefully there will be more of them in the coming weeks
like
and
Amiibos
that they get more available.
So popular. Yeah.
Well, I think it's just people realizing that they're actual buttons and stuff that they've just immediately sold out by.
And then they can use them to replace their broken N64.
Yeah. Can you imagine having a fidget thing that is just the Japanese Super Nintendo controllers that have the little divots for your fingers.
Oh,
it's been a while since we talked about it in this podcast. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it. While I hate the design of the console, American Super Nintendo pad is the best Super Nintendo pad. I love those little like Parma violet buttons that divot, and I love the colors.
I love that as well. Yeah, but I prefer the console design and the colors of the Super Nintendo. Super Famicom.
Yeah.
But I love the divots. Yeah, I'm with you on the divots, totally.
I love a good divot.
Me too.
Okay, right. On that note, let's wrap this
up. I love a good divot.
Yeah. I love a good divot.
And a good diversion. There's been plenty of them on this episode.
There has. I was going to say, you can tell we haven't done this for a while because there's a lot to talk about. We're just spinning off in different directions.
I hope you've liked that. I hope it hasn't been too much, and I hope you've got something from it. Do let us know.
Please do. You can do so in a variety of places, such as on X at EMAcast, at Game Boyle for me, at Tom Parry 11 for him. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TomAmAttack. We're also available in iTunes, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. So go do that. I realised recently Stitcher isn't a thing anymore, so I should stop saying that.
I was going to say, you didn't say Stitcher.
I didn't. For very good reason, because it doesn't exist, and I've been saying it longer than it has. If you have enjoyed Tom and I talking about video games, maybe you'll enjoy us talking about manga. You can do that at Manga Tack Pod, which is available everywhere.
Where
as
I am
well.
An occasional guest.
You are the rotating third chair. You've been on there three times, which is currently the record. Thank you so much for being on and talking to me about manga, Mr. Parry. It is massively appreciated. Okay, hopefully you've enjoyed listening to that and listening to this. As Tom says, let us know if you have. Let us know if you were convinced to go out and buy Pastel Muses or if you want to play Mario Kart against Tom, I guess, because he's full into it. You can do that on those places. And yeah, we'll be back again in a couple of weeks, I guess, with an episode of Tom I'm at Attack. Until then, though, be sure, as always, to game on. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Game on.